Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Today's Irish Tech News Podcast is presented by the Tech Doctor, Ronan Leonard, and you can follow me on Twitter at TECDR.
And now, a word from our sponsor, AgoraPulse. We know how hard it is to juggle all the things in your business. Accounts, meetings, the never-ending inbox. That's why we've teamed up with AgoraPulse to give you more than 5 hours back a week when it comes to managing your social media marketing. No complicated Excel docs, long emails, or millions of open tabs. Simply manage all your social media channels in one place. Go to www.agorapulse.com/IrishTechNews to get 1 month free. Now all you have to do is figure out how you want to spend those spare 5 hours.
Hi, welcome to today's Irish Tech News Podcast. Today I'm talking with Chris McClelland, Managing Director of Ignite AI. How are you doing, Chris?
Good, thanks, yeah. Ignite Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Now, before we start, tell me a bit about your background.
Yeah, so I've started a few companies. The first company I started, the first main company was Cleptic Labs, which was one of the first sort of mobile UX agencies. We built MailChimp's first app, eHarmony, things like that. But, you know, the consultancy world and sort of building apps for hire sort of hits a brick wall. So I shifted gears into sort of more product stuff. And the product that we sort of gravitated towards was Brewbot, which was a robot that brews beer. So that's a long story in itself, but yeah. We raised some money from extraordinary people. I got a real taste for, you know, building a company in San Francisco, and it was an amazing challenge and opportunity, but sadly didn't raise the money that we needed to go to the next level, so or to make that fruition. So I'm back in Northern Ireland. A few years ago, Tristan, who runs Ignite, asked me to sort of become a mentor on the program. Yeah. And that escalated very quickly. And I'm now the MD of the program as well. So, yeah.
Tell me a bit more. What does Ignite actually do?
We run 2.5 programs, essentially. The first one is Propel, Pre-Accelerator. Every year we take on 20 founders. With a glimmer of an idea, usually, and we help them sort of build the foundations and sort of start their startup in the best possible way. We do a later stage accelerator, which is for 10 companies.
Yep.
From anywhere. It can be outside of Northern Ireland. And they're more sort of like, oh, we're fundraising and we're growing into the US, those sort of characteristics of those companies. And the half one is the landing pad in San Francisco. So a lot of our programs, essentially, we do have a US mindset on a lot of things, a lot of our mentors, a lot of our, even the funding that has been invested in the companies are a lot of US money going into it. So the US sort of approach that we have is a bit of a unique selling point. And so we have a lot of sort of US influence. So that was working so well that we decided, oh, we're leaving some companies hanging here. So we just created a landing pad, which basically, for any company that has a real opportunity in the US, can go out there for 3 months.
Well, I guess having worked in the US in the past and been an entrepreneur, you know how the US mindset works. So it's great to have that out, because most startups, main aim is to try and go abroad in the long term.
Yeah, I think that starts with, you know, even the sort of type of customers and the markets that you're approaching as a startup founder. You know, it's very easy to gravitate towards your local market, and often the local market is difficult, or the characteristics aren't scalable, right?
Yeah.
So you might have fixed things within the local market, which, you know, you can't just go off into another market. So I think, you know, a big first step for a founder is to really discover where your early adopters are and where that market is. And it could be local. Brilliant if it is. So the US sort of mindset, or sort of just global mindset from the start, is beneficial in many ways. And I think an advantage for Northern Ireland is essentially the home market isn't big enough to create a big company, right? And there are parallels with Estonia, right? Estonia has an amazing sort of track record with companies that I think lots of places like Northern Ireland would aspire to have. But speaking to them, essentially, it's a similar sort of model, right? It's like the population at home is pretty low. Can't really sell there. So it's Estonia, essentially, the companies there had to be forced to think out of outside of Estonia. So that's one thing that made them successful.
You know, I'm thinking that basically sometimes when a product doesn't fit well in Northern Ireland or Ireland, but fits better in America, it's tougher to sell the home market. Because, like, I know Stripe, when that founded, that wouldn't have got off the ground in Ireland because the market there for it was limited. But in America, it was a limited potential.
Yeah, it is why, like, you know, Silicon Valley, or San Francisco particularly, has been a great place to launch the craziest of ideas, right? Because everybody's used to them, right? So the taxi drivers are talking about, you know, Ethereum or, you know, startups in a way that I would love to sometimes. You know, it's just like the insights that some people have. And your next door neighbor is the CEO of X, you know, or something like that, right? So it's that's sort of the sort of the culture that's there. And that's stuff that we can sort of,
Because at times I feel if somebody's doing a company that can work in Ireland, north and south, and then scale up, maybe you could use Ireland as your test bed. So when you go to great investment, you say, well, it worked here in Ireland. You can say, Ireland would be the equivalent of a small state in America.
It's difficult that, because if you think about, you know, the parameters of, you know, selling in Ireland versus selling in one of the states in the US, you know, it probably is better to start in a state in the middle of the US, right? So for us on the beer side of things, California made a lot of sense because the licensing law matched that, right? There was a lot of dynamics around like how breweries could brew beer. So all those sort of things created a perfect, we identified that, we had to find that. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like something that was obvious, but that sort of removed a lot of the risks around the product, right?
Yeah.
But there was also some challenges doing that as well. But if we decided to focus on California, and then if you can actually, nail it there, it's very easy to scale it across the entire the US, right?
Yeah.
And that's usually the approach. On like that's, you know, Uber does that, you know, that's geographical scaling across the US. So that can happen. So, but if you do that in Ireland or in Northern Ireland, it's very hard to do that. So if your customers are actually in America and you're convicted about that, then get started on it.
Yeah. No, I was more thinking of basically, when you're going to do is to a test and show that it works, and you use Ireland, and he had a few people there, and he said, look, these guys in Ireland, we liked it. And we know that if you like it here, we can grow up the scale in America.
Yeah. It certainly helps. It definitely, even in the last, you know, few years, the way VCs looked outside of Silicon Valley and look outside, you know, the US even has been a welcome thing. And, you know, thanks to Intercom, Stripe, you know, lots of companies that are, you know, unicorns are coming out of Europe, you know, that are happening are starting to force that. So that's just an example of like, you know, the markets are moving towards here. But I think, yes, so the idea of like, you know, oh, investing for a US investor to invest in a UK or Irish company, that's totally possible now and it's happening all the time. But also just the way they're thinking about markets and the advantage of being global or outside of Silicon Valley as well.
And I guess right now, we looked at the scene in Utah as well. There's a big startup scene there. And I was asked a couple years ago to go to attend a conference there that was run by Microsoft. And I said, well, this is strange because you're in a place that's run by Mormon, that's a Mormon state. And with Mormons, there's certain things that you do and don't do. So how can you have that when you can't drink or do other things that to us is normal? And for me, you start seeing from California, which is now in Ireland, is a place where you go to, and there's beers everywhere behind in certain places you go to get a beer. I'm thinking in Utah, you don't get that, but they still manage to create a great vibe.
Yeah, isn't look, sometimes it's about constraint and focus and other effects around, you know, city and sort of to do with like our network effects or just the entrepreneurs that are around and stuff like that. So I think, but back to like, you know, why Northern Ireland is a good place to start a business is because of those constraints and the focal part of that, right? And it's a similar sort of model, like, you know, essentially, distraction is the opposite of traction, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, those things sort of all play into it. And I, you know, back to just, you know, my experience being in San Francisco and running a company in both places, I always thought San Francisco was a place that I was just bursting and moving forward, and the graph was going up and to the right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I came back here, and it was a place I focused and executed and stuff like that. And I use that to my advantage, and I know a lot of founders and CEOs do that as well. So, but I'm just talking, I'm really just talking about, like, you know, this idea of where you start a business, I think is less and less important. I think it's more about who you're surrounding yourself with at that early stage, or, you know, the people that you're interfacing with. And I think, as you know, the last sort of year obviously has encouraged us to, you know, speak to lots of people from, with no geographical constraints, you know, in our program for, we exploded. Yeah. We went from like having like a few people from different locations into like having people from 13 different countries. You know, it's just like, it's just, you know, we're accessing people much easier. I think there is a big challenge around how we collaborate, you know, across different regions as well. I think that's one of the things that we sort of have a lot more room and things to work on as well.
You mentioned earlier about who you work with. I'm thinking of a couple of years ago, interviewed Jamie Heaslip, the ex-Ireland captain for rugby, and he was saying when he invested in, he's got investments in different startups, and he invests in a team. Because he said, if I didn't invest in him, I'd be walking to an office every day, you know, over the shoulders. They'd hate that, and I can't do that, and he said, I haven't time for that. So I make sure, it's like rugby, when you're playing in rugby, he said, you've guys that you trust to do the job. And I'm saying when you invest in startup, you've guys that you trust. One of the startups you invest in, Pointy, was bought last year, a couple years ago, for multi-millions by Google. So he's proven his point right.
So fundamentally, I think, like, you know, a founder or a startup is essentially a people thing, a human thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, people, you know, you build team. Sorry, start your customer, right? Identifying the problem is like it's, you need to like really empathize with the customer. You need to spend a lot of time with that, right? And you need to be, you know, good at that. And that's how good products are started. But then it comes into like, you know, how you utilize, like on our program, we introduce people to hundreds of mentors, right? So then it becomes like, how do you make the most of each of those people?
Yeah.
And everybody can have value to you. It's not even like direct value, it could be indirect value, you know, it's introductions and things like that, right? So, you know, but it's always brilliant to see a founder that is starting to make the most of all those things at the early stages.
Yeah.
Because it means whenever you start to think about, well, some people have co-founders already, but team members and things like that, right? It starts to just like essentially be a human game. So we do talk about human capital being more important than financial capital at the start of a business, because it's more about that. It's more about like building the right team, essentially.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with the right people. I think building a team is a very big challenge at this stage or early stage as well, because essentially, you know, it's a generous sort of game.
Yeah.
And things change very quickly, like things like COVID happens, or, you know, hopefully nothing like that happens again. But I mean, or, you know, this sort of stuff, like your market changes, your customers change quite a lot. So, you know, picking a team person and predicting the future before you sort of like really understand that at scale becomes very difficult. So it's something that we spend a lot of time about, you know, how to hire the right first people.
And I guess right now with COVID, it's making it harder and harder to find the right person to fit your team, because you can't meet in person.
Yep. But people have been hiring people remotely for a long time, right? So I think the danger of hiring remote people teams is actually having an office and a lot of people in a room together, right?
Yeah.
And then you're hiring someone. So that's sort of like, it's hard to change the culture and change that sort of like make sure that they belong and sort of, you know, they're included in everything, right? It's just like, it's really, really difficult. So again, an advantage of what's happened is essentially we're starting companies with a remote first approach.
Yeah.
And that's always the best, because you're operating like that. You have to make it work at the start, right? So I think that does play into, like, you know, hiring people, it has become challenging, but also, you know, opportunistic as well, because, you know, people are hiring people from all over the world. I love, like, you know, Boundless, obviously, an Irish company, like, really sort of figuring out, you know, how we all can hire from anybody from anywhere, right? And that's all happening. So there's massive advantage to that. And, you know, again, back to, like, the market thing, right? You're really, really, really searching for the early adopters, the right market, right? But now, because we can remote hiring, right, and you can actually find, you know, your dream team, essentially.
Yeah.
And you can come from anywhere.
But I'm thinking about 10 years ago, you couldn't do this. Technology isn't what it is now. So at least now we're in an age where the technology allows us to do this without any issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, there's lots of reasons why, yeah, technology is enabling this. I think there's lots of reasons why technology is slowing us down as well, because, you know, I love Slack to bits, but, you know, it does sort of create this sort of sometimes a toxic sort of like working environment and how you're sort of like, you know, communicating and stuff. It takes challenges. It's not perfect, right? Yeah. So, but there's massive amount of companies that are embedded in that that will not change, right? So it is the way people are working, but it is great to see newer sort of approaches to sort of how we're collaborating online and things like that. But it's still a big thing that we need to fix. And I mean, it's not just about how we talk to each other or communicate, it's how we share data and share knowledge and even tap into mass networks of people and their experience and, you know, things like that. And that's a huge opportunity.
Because in the past, you have the place where you go to the water cooler, and that's where you chat about new ideas and people you meet them there, whereas now that's gone anymore. So now you'd probably be in a Zoom call with a bottle of water, chatting instead, and it's not yeah, yep. it doesn't sound the exact same.
100%, and it is difficult. And you know, we essentially have it's 180 plus people in our sort of community now, so. So obviously there's people that are in program, there's alumni and stuff like that. We're about to add another 30, 40 with the accelerator stuff, you know, but essentially, you know, it is a challenge. And I think the bigger challenge is sort of like understanding everybody's, you know, extraordinary circumstances at home yeah. or, you know, in this sort of situation particularly. So it's extra difficult. So I'm really hoping like, you know, we can power through that and find solutions, obviously. But you know, there's still a lot of work on the sort of like, yes, as you said, the sort of more casual sort of like overheard stuff, you know, it's just like, those are really like, I think everybody has missed that in the last year. It's just something that's, you know, kind of didn't realize was there and you were learning from, or sort of like, it was good for you. But yeah, so there are a bunch of products. We actually use some stuff. We do like we've got like a breakfast morning and sort of like, you know, open coffee. We do those things internally in the program, but they're more social, sort of like casual, sort of like, beat-up style stuff. Yeah. That's working pretty well.
I guess COVID has changed the way you decide what company startups go on your various different programs.
Oh, so yeah, sorry. Yeah, so if you look at maybe the difference in our pipeline last year and the pipeline this year, yeah. What are the differences? Yeah. You know, it's probably not as stark as I imagined. I think obviously, you know, ed tech is a huge thing, even just traditionally for us in Northern Ireland. And yeah. There's some brilliant companies doing great work. And I think that's just building and there's great momentum in that area. But, you know, so we're seeing, yes, you know, a bit more about homeschooling or some sort of help around that. But I think the only danger, right, of COVID is essentially we're getting over it, right? Mm. It is a short-term thing. So if you problem solve too much for it, you know, it does the problem exist afterwards, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so there are sadly a bunch of companies that are probably, you know, making things work for us right now, but they're going to have to pivot hard whenever the world, you know, shifts and, you know, it's kind of hard to, gets back to normal.
Yeah, I guess pivoting is a hard thing you have to do in a company, because sometimes when you pivot, you might be losing what your focus was in that company.
So, yeah, pivots are part of any startup's life, essentially. They should be embraced in some form, right?
Yeah.
Because essentially, you know, we talked a little bit there about, you know, finding your customers and picking the right market, early adopters and stuff. It is a voyage of discovery, right? It takes time to figure that out. So, you know, so we talk a lot about experimentation culture on the program, right? So you're essentially building experiments and hypotheses and stuff like that, right? So, but that is a cycle. That's kind of sometimes in early stages, a weekly cycle that you're doing those things, right?
Yeah.
And even we're 3 weeks into this program, 4 weeks, and there being pivots already. Or I would prefer to sometimes call them focusing in, right? So essentially, everybody on this program, essentially, we've assessed them based on founder market fit, right? So those founders are deeply caring about those markets. So the market hasn't changed. It's just your approach has changed to it, right? And I think, yes, just on that sort of technical sort of debt stuff, right? So essentially, you know, it's a very hard thing to let go of, you know, and sadly, you know, some founders go further down the line, you know, all of a sudden I've spent 20 grand on something, right, being built.
Yeah.
And that's in the back of the mind and trying to make that work versus like going, oh, if I just pivoted slightly here, are 10 customers instead of 10,000 customers, yeah, that can give me, you know, get me to that revenue levels, right? So it is a hard thing to do, but I absolutely think it should be embraced.
Yeah, I do think that when you pivot, you've got to realize that when you're in a business, what you start off doing won't be where you end up in 2 years after that.
It's a fact. Like, if you look at, like, segments, Slack, you know, Instagram, Twitter, none of them started the way they did. It's just the normal part of the process. Successful companies generally have started and figured out their customers and their approach, right? It's part of the evolution. I think it is extremely dangerous. You know, whenever people have sort of fixed things, right? You know, it is part of your job as an entrepreneur to be curious, to be open-minded, to sort of be on that voyage of discovery, finding stuff, right? So, but, you know, things are missed if you're too stuck on things, right? And so it is a good trait whenever people are sort of like just constantly looking for those patterns, the little clues, the ways in, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I'm looking at it on Facebook. What they were when about 10 years ago and where they are now, they're totally different space, and they're making more money than ever.
Where they'll be in 10 years' time is going to be interesting as well.
Because I'm looking at when they started off and what they were doing, and then when they started getting into advertising and other things, and suddenly they became more important browser in certain ways than Google was, and then suddenly now when they got Oculus Rift, what are they going to do with that, and what's next on the horizon?
So I think it's also dangerous for some founders to be sort of looking at big companies like Facebook, and Intercom's a big company now, and, you know, Stripe, you know, we get that a lot. Like, there are, like, obviously the trailblazers and the people that sort of, like, you know, lead the way, and, you know, Intercom's has probably influenced more entrepreneurs than we can even imagine just based on their content, right? So that's all great. But the problem is, like, you know, Facebook, the bit that's missing sometimes looking at the leap, right, billion-dollar businesses, is Facebook started, or look at the Amazon story, right? They started an office and, like, spray-painted Amazon on the wall, right? So, you know, I think it's easy to look at those big companies and jump to there instead of going, right, how did they start? And, you know, most of those companies, like, they went through the stage of 0 to 10 customers, like a lot of companies do, another 0 to 10 to 100, you know. So, but, you know, big companies, you know, the other thing that's about big companies is the market, right? So as they grow, that TAM needs to grow, or the sort of total addressable market has to scale. They need to start thinking about different segments of the market, right? So initially, most companies start, or the best way to start is like, this is sort of niche, sort of, you know, a focal sort of part of the sort of market that has essentially, you know, the early adopters in it. You know, you look at it and go, right, I've got this cracked, and go into the next market. You know, so that's sort of like sales in. That's what you're sort of looking for on the market side of things. So, but what I'm saying is, like, when you look at, like, massive companies, like, they're now in multiple segments. They're having to sell. Also, even like the price of, you know, the average value of a customer needs to be big, right? Yeah. So, you know, there's plenty of massive sort of B2B SaaS business are doing 100K sort of, you know, contracts or $1 million contracts with some organizations, right? So, you know, for a startup to look at that stuff ends up being quite dangerous.
Yeah, because I'm thinking basically that, as I said earlier, when you look at Google chain, and I'm also looking at companies like Stripe. Swiping something like Intercom or guys that can more relate to, because they always more or less they didn't pivot too much on what they're aiming to do, and it showed that with a great mindset how you can grow a good business.
Oh, 100%. There's so much we can learn from Stripe's just endlessly, like, you know, surprising us. I think they're massively undervalued. I think they've got an incredible company culture, right? And even the way they feedback on people being hired and stuff like that, it's just you know, the process is like David Singleton, the CTO, is from Belfast, has been on the program a bunch, so we learn a lot from, like, you know, his experience. So it's just like, it's absolutely brilliant, and they're still thinking like a startup, right? So I think it's, you know, I love the way they're investing in companies now, and, you know, that's really exciting. So I'd do a couple of days on Stripe if you want to, the podcast will now go there. But I mean, like, yes, so looking at Stripe, you know, thinking about the way they started with one line of code, you know, interface, developers, right? So they were speaking to developers, right? That's a really important thing about Stripe, but also Intercom, right? They're speaking to product people, right? Yeah. And they were very, very good at honing in on, like, that's who we're communicating to, that is the customer, that is how we sort of build all our messaging, that's who we care about. You know, all that stuff is absolutely stuff that any startup should borrow. It's that sort of like building a fan base and building sort of like, you know, long-term relationships with your customers as well. You know, that's, you know, I think at the early stage, most startups are building relationships with customers that could be with them for like 5-10 years. And it's a good thing to think about.
Yeah, I'm thinking when you said basically try and remain like a startup, I'm thinking of this famous Steve Jobs quote, stay hungry, stay foolish.
Yep. That's that just reminds me of, like, you know, the various phases of startups, right? So basically, you know, the gears that you're shifting building a startup ends up being, especially in a CEO role, is quite dramatic, right? Yeah. So, you know, you're all of a sudden you're going from a 5-person team where you're sort of hacking away in the code or pixel pushing or something like that to, like, you know, oh, now I'm a manager and stuff, and it's happening very quick. Or, you know, you're dealing with, you know, HR issues, or, you know, now you're doing financials, now you have to, like, have a CFO, right? That change is extremely quick and extremely exciting, in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, that sort of, like, growth and sort of expectation is pretty pretty dramatic, right? So, yeah.
And to me, I'm thinking of, I know a company that I call Hugnote, I don't know if you heard of them. And this, I met them about 3-4 years ago and they were just starting off. And their idea was that you can send somebody a message every website and it would then play a song. And be like a song for one of an artist. You could send somebody a song and say, I'm thinking of you, it's your birthday, can't be there. And now during the pandemic, that's been used much more than ever. So they managed to find the right time, and then right now everyone's using the product because of the pandemic, because they can't see their friends. So you get a message and they might say, for example, oh, today's St. Patrick's Day, or today is basically American Independence Day. And on this day, because you can't see your friends, we're allowing you to use those for free. And that's when companies are looking right now and seeing the pandemic as a way of gaining custom.
Sorry, which bit was...
They're now seeing the pandemic as a way of gaining new customers and new traction and proving their worth.
You got to look at the market.
Yeah.
You know, every customer has changed, right? That is the most exciting thing from a sort of entrepreneurial perspective. You know, it's wide open. You know, there's big companies that, you know, in the physical world particularly, right, that's, you know, are struggling. But that is like a massive opportunity for startups. So I think, like, so it's not about, like, I think abusing or trying to, like, to make the most of this, right? It's just because the behaviors of a lot of customers and the market essentially shifted, right?
Yeah.
Where people are working and all that stuff. And that is just like fundamentally, startups are helping people, right? They're solving a problem for people, right?
Yeah.
It's not about, and I think, you know, once you sort of like go away from that, you sort of start to lose, you know, what you're about, right? Yeah. And I love the sort of saying that, you know, money is a byproduct of a good business.
Yeah.
You know, focus on making a good business and bringing value to people, and that stuff comes out. So back to your thing, yes, it's absolutely an opportunity right now to acquire customers and think about markets differently. And, you know, it's changing still, right? Yeah. So still 2021 is a big opportunity for that.
And I guess basically, if you can gain customers now during this pandemic, when the pandemic is over, you're going to keep them and gain more because you managed to show them how you've coped during this difficult time.
Yeah, I think every startup should be communicating better with their, you know, the customers, keeping them engaged, you know, updates and stuff like that, you know. And I think that's a time more than anything, you know, but also it's a time to sort of, you know, interview your customers, speak to them, you know, see if there's anything else, you know, because, you know, that's also like, you know, you have to discover. And, you know, I know a lot of people are very focused on customer acquisition and sort of finding customers, but sometimes, you know, founders aren't really looking at the customers that they have or spending enough time. So, you know, that's another thing that's really important at this time as well.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Agorapulse. We know how hard it is to juggle all the things in your business. Accounts, meetings, the never-ending inbox. That's why we've teamed up with Agorapulse to give you more than 5 hours back a week when it comes to managing your social media marketing. No complicated Excel docs, long emails, or millions of open tabs. Simply manage all your social media channels in one place. Go to www.agorapulse.com/IrishTechNews to get 1 month free. Now all you have to do is figure out how you want to spend those spare 5 hours. Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/IrishTechNews, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.